Unique New York. Unique New York. How now, brown cow? How now?
Oh.
Were you drinking this or is this mine?
Which one did you open?
3, 2, 1, see ya.
You're listening to the Beast Life Podcast with your hosts, Randy and Brian.
Alright,
ladies and gentlemen, we're back with the Base Life Podcast. Podcast. John Sizzle, thank you for joining us.
What's up, dudes?
And thank you for giving me the motivation to drag this equipment down to Lauterbrunnen and set it up expeditiously and have a nice evening with you.
Yeah, man, wouldn't
feel
miss
like
it.
We've already had a nice evening, but we're continuing to have a nice evening.
It's definitely quieter than the last location we were with the
40, oh yeah, yeah,
40 loud drunk people up front.
Yeah, I think there's some British military in town doing something. They're having a good time. Not judging them. I've been there.
Definitely.
I haven't been British, but I've been a military dude in a town being loud. But
shit on airplane mode.
Yeah, quick thank you to TJ for letting us stay at Das Kreuz. And Arno, you know who you are. Thank you for giving me the motivation to record another podcast. Appreciate you being consistent about asking for another episode. Hope this one doesn't let you down.
I'm probably one of your biggest fans, man.
I don't feel like we have fans. We have listeners.
All six of them.
Fans sound so
long time listener,
to me.
First time talking.
I'm just putting my phone on airplane so we don't get weird static.
Oh yeah,
but I mean, it should be fine if it's not doing it right now. But man, I feel like we go way back. Like was that 13, 14? We were talking about it a little bit earlier.
Doing our
when you said you met Morel, and yeah. So that tightens the group for me a little bit, because I remember picking him up from the airport,
mm-hmm,
and driving down here, and he was looking at all these terrible cliffs along the way that are like tiny and little. He's like, bro, that's jumpable, and I'm like,
dude, shut up,
relax.
Just
relax.
Wait,
yeah, it's about
wait
to get
till
a lot
the train
better
ride. Yeah,
yeah. So that was 14 probably. Had to be 14.
Yeah, because yeah. I got here in 13, and by 14, that's when folks started showing up.
Yeah. Yeah, we barely knew what we were doing. I mean, we didn't know what we were doing, and people were asking us to like show us around, and we're like...
But, it was kind of the show up and the first person you meet in the Horner. Like literally, Jonathan Murrell, first person, yeah, I met in the Horner. He's packing in the hallway.
Or someone has a stash bag, right? You know,
yeah.
It's like, oh,
like, hey,
you have a stash bag. You
hey,
must
dude,
be.
Where's the exit?
And where are you going? I want to go there with you.
Yeah, he literally, you know, it wasn't like, you know, take a course. You can only go to Lemoose. Don't go to Steckelberg. He was like, do you have any videos of your jumps? I was like, yeah, I just came from Norway. And I showed him a track and he's like, cool, we're going to High Nose. And I was like, what's that?
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, there we were. But, yeah, that was super cool trip. Definitely fun, you know, doing those, like, running 3 and 4 ways off the ramp was just, you know.
Yeah.
Dream come true for me. Just super, you know, salivating for it.
You know who doesn't do that anymore?
Me.
Or me.
Back right. when the ramp was twice as long.
Back in our day.
Back when it was long enough.
The men were men, and the sheep were scared.
Yeah, I think it needs to be about 50 centimeters longer.
Yeah, I tell myself that all the time.
Oh, man. Good times.
Sorry, I feel like I... If it doesn't digress to a dick joke, it's not a Base Life conversation.
Right? Yeah.
But yeah, so you guys had a fun day, huh?
Yeah.
A little time in the sunshine, some Swiss awesomeness.
Yep. Yeah. Well, I mean, first we bombed down here. We left about 9 o'clock, 9:30. And then, I mean, we got here by 2:30?
Three. Yeah.
Three.
By the time went we
straight up a mountain to go do mountain Swiss things.
Swiss farmer things.
We're probably looking at each other across the valley, didn't even know it.
Mm-hmm.
That was a tough first Milkstuhl of the year. hike.
They're always tough.
But you've done Milkstuhl before, right? So you kind of knew where to pace yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. Knew the stops, and you know that spring is such a lifesaver. Just going up there, not having to bring a ton of water, and then you know all the chains and stuff to make it easier. It's just awesome. It's not like you know trying to go up Notch Peak or something in the States where you're like, I hope the trail is somewhere nearby. Because there isn't a trail.
Where is Notch?
Notch is in the House Range in Utah. It's kind of more on the Nevada side, and it's sort of the basin and range area. You know, kind of looks like Black Rock City, Burning Man Desert near there. There's a big dry lake bed. Mm. And then the Salt Lake dudes years ago, Marshall, Neil and them, they basically just made a road kind of up into this like prospector basin basically and just jumped the heck out of it. And I think, you know, Hartman, Marshall, Neil, Jesse, they've been there more than anybody. And when I moved there, it was like, I was like, okay, there's a wingsuit base jump in Utah. I'm going to go find it. And it was kind of after the season where I'd spent the whole summer in Europe doing a thing, and then moved to Salt Lake, sold out, got a real job, and then went and jumped Notch, and it's pretty awesome. It's sharp, you know, it's not like here, it's not big, green, wonderful landing areas, kind of like everything wants to eat your canopy, but you know, it's raw, it's different feel, it hits different than kind of jumps around here. It's not just like, oh man, if I end up in a tree, I'm just going to push this button, here comes Riga.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a little different.
Yeah.
A little nicer here.
Yeah, it's interesting kind of coming into, like, I've gone a couple of different places and then coming back into, like, sort of the bubble of passive safety that there is with, you know, the helicopters, the rescue, the just ability to get around. Like, if, you know, if you needed to bring me something, if I forgot something, you could just show up in 45 minutes somewhere versus like, oh man, like, yeah, 6 hour hike later.
I'm in the middle of fucking nowhere.
Yeah. Like, oh, I just got to the top of the first ridge on Bering and I don't have my helmet. Or if you're like me, you
or cell service,
kick your helmet off the freaking mushroom gear up area. You were there for that, weren't you?
Yep.
We both watched it. Just
oh shit.
Oh yeah, that's one GoPro. Oh, there's the other one.
Yep,
it's gone.
I mean, I'll chill here. You guys go ahead. I'm gonna watch him go fucking try and find that thing.
I did find like two other GoPro pieces from like Hero Ones when I was searching for all that.
Which accent was that from?
Mushroom.
The mushroom.
Was I there for that?
No.
No. Okay. I was like, I don't remember that.
The funny part was, so at the Horner that night, Chris Burns is like, well, mate, you kicked your helmet off the mountain. Hey, let me give you this helmet. And he gives me this helmet that he wore for skydiving competitions and stuff. And
what?
Yeah, he just, I think he gave him like $20 for it or something.
Sure.
But he gave it to me, and then a group of people, we were going up the next day, so we did it again the next day. And I was like, all right, cool. On the hike up, I'm going to look for my stuff. And Swiss Simon was going to the High Eiger that day, and he had caught the first train. We missed it, and we caught the second one. And he was hiking up, and he found my GoPros on the trail, just sitting on the trail. And later when we got back, he's like, he had posted a screen grab from one of the videos, and it's like, does anybody know this guy? And they're like, oh yeah, he's right over here. And I got that back, got the fly site, got the GoPro. One of them was just gone, but it was awesome because that was also my logbook for the trip. It was all the GoPro clips. But I was like, oh, I only have back view now.
Yeah, it's better than my logbook. I don't even log anymore.
what's a logbook?
Yeah, right? Exactly. Yeah,
I've been on 500 jumps for the last like 6 years. I don't know. I was like, people just ask me, 500. I don't know.
Ish.
Good enough.
I did three today.
Right?
Current.
Not dead yet.
Yeah. Yeah, but that, I kind of like forget, hiking in, you know, desert areas and kind of dry places or just other spots, like, and you come back to the sort of magic of the valley and just hiking along and the tinkling of bells, seeing hanging glaciers, hanging seracs, the paragliders buzzing around. It's got special feels to it, you know, for sure.
Magic.
Yeah. And it feels like it's back. Like, I don't know. Like it was, maybe it was COVID, maybe it was other things going on, but I feel like this season it's like, oh, we're back and it's full on. Like, yeah. I mean, even the ramp is dangerous again. So,
yeah. I just keep, you know, waiting to see old characters popping around and stuff. It's interesting because the places have the feel of what things you did with those people. Mm-hmm. And I just remember, like, you know, certain people's personalities and characters and kind of shenanigans.
Yeah. Yeah. We're stoked to have, to caught you. I mean, cause you're only slipping through Lauterbrunnen real quick. And now where are you headed to next?
This was supposed to be a week, but we talked about earlier my travel troubles, but, next is, going to go up to Norway for the Hellebuggy, another super special spot. And, you know, kind of what would it be? A power spot, just sort of, they have their own really awesome nature, but, going to go up there for that and then, be back in a week. But my lady is meeting me in Norway. Mm-hmm. My buddy Corey Nelson and, his lady are going to be there too. So we have a cabin for the four of us.
Fancy.
So the ladies are going to watch us be complete idiots while we're there. It'll be awesome because we're going to be so focused on jumping and completely lose our minds. And I'm sure they'll just take the shattered pieces of us at the end of the day and feed them, put them away. And
yeah, there's only like 2 hours of darkness up there. So like,
yeah, it's interesting when you close the bar and then the next day starts.
Yeah.
I've definitely found the wrong end of that.
How many times have you been up there?
Norway. I think this is four going on five.
Nice.
Cause I, when I was learning, I had kind of a long intro to bass, which I could kind of go into, but
we're welcome to,
but we got 19 hours left on the card.
Plenty of time.
But I started jumping, in the military. I was in kind of oral community. I was a FMF corpsman, so, you know, with a 1st Marine Division. And then I went to eventually MARSOC headquarters. And I was not a cool guy, but I got the opportunity through being part of that organization to go to airborne school. And before that, I got to work with the Special Operations Training Group, and I got to participate in most of the evolutions for the training for the special operators, like Hurstmaster, or, you know, dangling from helicopters and all the different ways that the military can think of, which kind of broke me into the air world. I was like, this is cool. I like this. This feels good. And eventually went to airborne school, you know, a little five jump chump, did one jump in the fleet, watched my buddy pound in, break his back. And I went feet ass head backwards on a taxiway and got a concussion. And that was 2007. And, that kind of scared me off for a little while. And then got out, had zero qualifications, got my EMT, became hometown volunteer fire, paid ambulance. Then, went to my home state's university. I went to UConn. Kind of dabbled my way through. My first year, I was like, all right, I think I want to be pre-med, you know, I'll take all the pre-med stuff. Did okay the first semester, you know, A's and B's. Second semester, wasn't really winding my clock, and I was thinking about, you know, dropping out of college and trying to go and join the 19th group and try to be an 18 Delta.
And so it's like Green Berets, but it's a guard.
Yeah, it's the National Guard, and they're headquartered out of Utah. And I was like, you know, my purpose for a while was this military thing, and I felt like I'd kind of strayed from that purpose in what I was doing. And it was kind of the only community I'd felt a part of for a long time. And then I got an email one random Wednesday night. UConn Skydiving Club is having a meeting in this such and such lecture hall. And I was like, we have a skydiving club? This exists in a college? How is this possible? And showed up to that meeting, and I was like, hey, dude, I got 6 jumps. And they were like, really? Tandems? And I was like, no, like military static line. And they're like, all right, cool. You want to be in the course tomorrow? So I was in AFF the next day.
Nice.
And then, you know, did the typical, like, oh, me likey, more, please. And, you know, how it goes. And then that was probably April or May. And then, you know, I found out about this Bridge Day thing, and I'd always watched all the ski movies. I was really into skiing.
May and then Bridge Day.
October.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Rocked up to Bridge Day.
All the same year? Like,
oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, wow.
I rocked up to Bridge Day, 126 jumps.
Hold on. And how quickly did you get 120?
A summer.
I did 126 jumps in 4 years of college.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, addictive personality, right?
I didn't have enough money to do more. Like,
yeah. Yeah. So I definitely did I did what they tell you not to do in Tropic Thunder.
Yeah. Go full.
Yeah, I went full on.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I
missed that word.
And so, yeah, I'd found my community again. I was like, I like these misfits. Trying on those feels, that
what
fits
year was
good.
That a Bridge Day?
That was 2010.
Dude, that was my first Bridge Day. I was there.
Sick.
Yeah, me and C.
The funny part is, I think I ended up seeing Scotty Bob there, and I was like, that monkey looks familiar. I was like, I know that guy. And I didn't like put two and two together for a while. He was at MARSOC at the same time as me, and he worked in the PAO office, and I was in medical. And I was like, what the, that guy? Yeah, he was the guy that I was just sitting there staring at his screen looking at Google Maps or something. Well, Google Maps probably didn't exist, but he was like.
He was probably reconning like jumps.
Yeah, he was, he had already been like jumping in the valley, and he'd been here a bunch and doing a bunch of stuff. So I was like, all right, cool. Well, sometimes just you're in the same place with the people, and it's just, all right, that's where I'm going. That's what I'm doing. And, I also started paragliding that same fall. I found a place up in New Hampshire that would teach me to paraglide. So I went kind of full in and was like, all right, let's do skydiving. Let's do some base jumping. Let's learn to paraglide. And so I go to Bridge Day, no helmet, Mojo 220, made for a guy that was like a foot shorter than me or something.
Oh, shit.
And promptly I'd learned how to fold my pilot chute in my hand. In the How to Survive Bridge Day course. It's awesome, by the way.
While you were in line for your turn?
Yeah. And hey, does this look right, man? And the inspectors are just catching, like, you know, 180 risers, and, you know, dudes have their stuff hooked up all kinds of wrong. It was a Velcro rig.
That's what I had.
And I was like, all right, this feels pretty spicy. I like this. I haven't felt this way since, you know, we were at the two-way range. And jump off, took a 6-second delay. Taylor Cole,
that's solid.
In the video, I was like, I'm a complete idiot. But he's like, that's the deepest delay I've seen all day.
Oh god.
I was like, I sucked it down. I was like, come on, baby, yeah. And, you know, pitched, had like a 10-second canopy ride, stalled into the river, you know, came up into the boat, and I was like, yes, let's do it again. And my buddy Matt Connor was this rigger at a home drop zone, and he was one of the base jumpers, and he was those guys. They go to Bridge Day. They're base jumpers.
Yeah.
They were like, yeah, those guys. Yeah. They're crazy, man. Every year they go and jump off this bridge. And I was like, cool. Yeah. Let's do that. And so, the affectionate name for the local base jumping contingents was Team Rusty Trombone. Spawned by my buddy, Justin Suplicki. Team Rusty Trombone. So I ended up being on the team, but I also was going to UConn, and I found four-way, and I found collegiate competition, and we went to collegiates that December after Bridge Day, and I kind of saw what went on and how it was, and I was like, I could do something with this. Like, we could do something with this. So the team was pretty small, but it was handed to me by a guy named Cam. Cam had put in for a bigger budget for more rigs so we could expand. So I was like, all right, these guys just need to be pointed in the right direction. They can crush it. Like, let's just do that. So we got this skydiving club. I was like, cool, we're getting matching jumpsuits. They're all going to match our rigs. Let's get a training schedule together. Let's get a budget together. We're going to start winning some stuff. We're going to take the medals home to the school. We're going to justify a bigger budget. And then we're going to go back and we're going to beat all the surface academies.
Trying not to throw up right now as you talk about a four-way team. You went from base jumping to a four-way team.
I'm coming back.
Sorry.
I did, because I realized, I was like, this is amazing. I can't keep doing this, or I'm not going
to
graduate.
I see your logic, though, like to make it better. And
I had to choose. And I was like, all right, if I want a future, I need to finish this thing if I want it to be the way that I envision it. So I do that. I continue going to Bridge Day for another couple years and just getting, you know, three jumps a year or whatever. I picked up kind of some mentorship from this guy, Mark Krasinski, and he is like badass of parachuting. He works in parachute research. He developed a lot of the military systems. He is who all the military systems are made for. He's the test jumper. He's like the one. And he taught me how to pack, and I buy some ragged out Dagger 244 from some dude
Dagger
in Moab.
Ooh, I haven't heard that one in a while.
Shout out to whoever sold me clown puke. I loved that canopy. But it was like red end cells, all orange, neon ribs. It was clown puke. It was awesome. And I decide senior year, instead of going to Sebastian every spring break and doing like trying to chase the dudes doing the angle stuff, which I really liked, I was going to go death camp myself at the Prine. I was like, I've been to Bridge Day. I know how to pack. I got this.
Yeah.
I show up to the Prine. I huck myself off like 20 times over that week in March. And people were like, you're going to die, dude. You need to go take a course. Like, you don't know what the hell you don't know. So I was like, all right, who's got openings? Sean. He's like, oh, I'm booked out. I was like, Miles. Oh, I'm booked out. Tom Aiello. He's like, I actually have an opening. I was like, cool. Can I be in it? He's like, yeah, sure. So I just, boom. I was like, cool. Snake River, let's go. And I show up, and it's just me and a Kiwi dude named Louis Chirizi. The only two people in the course. So we got, like, super attention. We had to do a bunch of jumps. But I definitely pissed him off because I'd ordered a blackjack, and it came in, and I assembled my rig, and I jumped it the morning before the course started off the Prine. But he was like, you're not supposed to do that, dude. It's a course for a reason. You can't die until I say you can. You got to write your letter first. So, go to the Prine and get undeath camped, kind of learn what I don't know, get reacquainted with round parachutes vis-a-vis the water jump, which scared me more than anything, because the last time I had a round on my back, I smacked in pretty hard and knocked myself out.
So you guys jumped a water rig with? Sorry, I'm not.
That's part of the camp.
I'm not familiar with that part.
In his course, part of the camp is you do a water round jumps. One or two? And you're supposed to take a 4-second delay, which is like, 1, 2, 3, 4, pitch. But he does that in this course. And I thought it was pretty good. And it gave me what I needed to fill in the gaps. And also, mostly what it gave me was I was able to sort of data mine, like, what's the way forward? How do you get to doing the Euro jumps? And how do you, you know, I want to fly in the mountains. Like, I went through a long mountaineering phase where I did a bunch of climbing in New Hampshire and Mount Washington and the Whites in the winter and a bunch of stuff like that, learning how to do it right. I used to go to Mount Rainier like every summer for about 4 years. I was a guided client twice, and then I took a buddy from my unit up and then road tripped out with a college buddy right after I got my A license, and did Rainier again. Guiding him basically. And also on that road trip, I visited Moab for the first time, and had 33 jumps, showed up to Moab. I bought a, what was that black camera, the Contour? Remember that? The old, like, it was like HD, but it was 720. It was as high as it went. And I had stow-banded that to the top of a ProTec and jumped out of the Cessna in Moab with Ben Lowe and did my first, like, two-way over the desert out of a Cessna and then promptly, like, completely ate shit in the landing area because I didn't know about density altitude. I was like, man, my 210 doesn't fly so well up here. What's up with that? Must have been that gopher hole I tripped in.
I got no flare.
But anyway, did some other mountaineering stuff in South America, and I always wanted to be in the mountains. And, you know, flying seemed like a really cool way to enjoy them. And I was like, yeah, I want to go jump in the Alps. How do I do that? And through Tom's course, I was sort of data mining, like, hey, dude, how do I do this? Where do I go? What do I do? He's like, yeah, go to Brento or go to Norway. And I was like, well, okay, pluses and minuses. And then I was thinking, I was like, well, I'm a shit canopy pilot. So Brento's probably not the place for me because if I end up needing to put it in on a road, I'm going to be in a tree. And I was like, I can walk in the rain. I can live in a tent that's wet, and I can swim pretty good. Sounds like I'm going to Norway.
Norway, yeah.
Yeah.
But that's how I came full circle. And
yeah, I mean, if you pull high enough, Brento's fine.
Yeah.
It's when you don't.
After watching my canopy progress in the course, I think he also recommended Norway, so that might have been indicative of my lack of skill.
But here's good, too. Like, I mean, because you can still, I mean, you can, I mean, the landing areas are really close to where you jump from.
Yeah. So. And here, it's just, like, slightly lower, but the flying time in Norway, just the exit to landing.
Mountain skydiving. I mean,
that's, yeah. I mean, it's just El Cap on the side of a freaking fjord. It's it's awesome. And not to mention, like, the something about being in the land of the midnight sun and that waterfall that just is right over town, you know. I feel like I'm going to visit Norway commercial or something, but I'm sure it's going to be a great time. I'm really stoked to go.
Yeah, no,
I haven't been there in a number of years.
Yeah, I did Heli Boogie in 2014, and I haven't been back. And nothing against Heli Boogie. It was the logistics of getting from Stuttgart to Stavanger and then driving some more and then everything else. Just I need to get back up there.
It's coming.
Yeah, it's.
It's not going anywhere.
No. Next weekend looks good.
Well, I'll be in London next weekend.
Oh yeah.
Actually, by the time this releases, it will be last weekend probably. But
yeah. But yeah, at this point, maybe I should just buy a ticket to Stavanger.
I mean, hitchhike. There's some floor space in the cabin.
Right.
I got a sleeping pad for you.
Yeah, one hard opening and you jack your back up and then
I'm just gonna hang out with Randy.
Oh yeah, we do have the post injury crew, eh?
Yeah,
that's right. We're all a bunch of broke dicks now.
Yeah,
well, Randy's back.
I'm mostly back.
Randy did a jump last week.
Yeah.
My injury is definitely sore after today.
What did you do?
Oh, 2016. So ended up. So anyway, after learning all that stuff from Snake River Base and that.
How many bungees do you use, by the way, when you pack?
19.
Okay, just checking.
No, zero. I'd already learned to pack, and then, like, yeah, the bungee thing's funny, too, huh? Because, like, people are like, where's your stakes and bungees? And legit, I tried that for a little while, and then I slowly, like, whittled down what I needed, and now I literally just use, like, you know, two pull-up cords and two micro clamps, but
nice.
Yeah, I just kind of have this weird, I call it a valley pack because I learned packing from like four different people. I learned a straight up reserve pack. I learned like the Snake River way. And then I saw kind of how dudes did it here. And then I had to sort of put it together once I got an ultralight rig and didn't always have clamps. So I had to kind of like, you know, figure out different ways to tension and like use my toes or kind of like do a lunge. Or I just kind of developed this mollycod of packing styles into just something that works.
Find your thing.
But yeah. But how I got hurt was after I had that season here, I ended up going, doing tandems and video for a couple months back in New England. And then I moved to Salt Lake City and had an awesome winter, sold out, got a real job. Ended up working in a hospital in Salt Lake. The degree I got from UConn was a nursing degree. And just started having fun there. And I was like, oh, Salt Lake. Everybody paraglides and speed flies. I had a paragliding license. Might as well speed fly. And got my lunch eaten just like every skydiver that goes and starts speed flying.
I hate speed flying. It doesn't kill as many of my friends, but it breaks so many
of them.
So I was speed flying with some dudes, took me up to a launch in the Oakers. Shout out to them for, you know, basically saving me. But I launched, we were flying over, it was a traverse into a line. It got pretty shallow. We launched in light and lift. We traversed over a part where there was shadow and sink. I didn't make a good glide. I was going to go for an out. And when I was going for the out, my outside left A-line basically clipped one little twig, caused the left side to fold under. I went up and over, and I pounded hard.
Wow.
On a Phaser 2 12-meter. Broke.
I had a Phaser.
Ass over elbows.
Yeah, I catted super hard in the air, and PLF'd my tail off, and unfortunately got my feet between me and the ground, but sprained both ankles, smushed my L1, or compression fracture L1, L2, burst fracture L3. Fortunately, it broke forward into my, you know, kind of away from my spinal cord. And then I broke off the two spinous processes at L1 and L2, the little nubs that stick off the back that basically cracked off from the tension and the impact when I braced. And then my knees hit me in the chest so hard, I kind of popped my top of my sternum. They were kind of weirdly overlapped. It might have been my collarbone, not sure. And then I coughed up some blood, so I think I kind of smacked my trachea pretty good. But I was like, cool, coughing up blood. I'm dead.
Oh, this is the end.
But I kind of did the, you know, hit, bounce, roll. Yeah, I know. It's like it's a supplement or a sympathy back pain, right? Yeah. Just looking at each other like, oh, man, might need to roll out. But, basically broke all that stuff in my back, didn't know it. Tried to stand up and walk a little bit, ended up kind of crawling back out to the trail that we were on. And I was super smart that day, and I wore khaki pants and a green jacket.
So people could find you.
Yeah,
see you.
Yeah, the helicopter, yeah. So super easy for them to find in the sagebrush and scrub oak. But they couldn't find me for a while. Helicopter made a bunch of passes. Finally, my buddy shows up, and I kind of owe it to Nathan Moss for basically saving me. I see this little hat kind of bobbling over, and I just, at this point, things weren't working anymore, so I just kind of laid down, and I just sort of pulled out this half moon of grass that I was just doing to sort of manage, and I was still staying in kind of like, you know, soldier mind, basically. I was just thinking, what's next, what's next, what's next? And I was trying to ignore the thing. Second helicopter, or that first helicopter comes in, tries to put a skid down and land. It can't land. It's air med. And I see just the medic or the flight nurse or whoever was in the right seat just sort of wave at me. Bye. And I was like,
we'll be
back. I'm fucked. And they just peel off and fly away. And I was like, okay.
We'll come all right. Back.
Now what happens? And then
they know where I am.
About 45 minutes later, an hour later, I hear another helicopter come in, and they long lined in a medic. It was a guy named Hal. So shout out to Hal when you're listening to the Bath Life podcast.
What up, awesome. Hal?
Hal shows up, does a pretty basic assessment, and I'm like, all right, dude, like, where's the basket? Where's the Skedco? You know, like, where's the Stoke stretcher? What you got? Where's the backboard? Come on. I'm hurting. He's like, well, I have this net. It's C-spine rated. I was like, a net? Like a fish? What do you mean net? And he literally pulls out, it looks like a fishnet, like a cargo fishnet, and he like puts me in it, has me put my helmet back on, and puts me in a sea collar. I was like, it's my back, bro.
A helmet that's probably been impacted, but you know.
Yeah. And so basically they bring the line back in, hoist out, I fold in half, scream.
You're just like, no, dear God, no.
Scream bloody murder the entire, it was a winch ride. I just got pulled up to the helicopter, not in. And then they go over to where the ambulance is waiting at the bottom and winch me down. And I don't know, my theory is I felt a shock through my lower back butt area. I think the static electricity from the helicopter discharged through my butt when I was coming down to the ground, because I just felt this like white hotness and I was unconscious. And then I like open my eyes and there's like six heads over me and it's like cop, firefighter, and then like the two heli crew.
And like, I was like, I'm in hell.
I was like, I think I literally
poking
said,
me with the stick.
Thank you all for coming. Can I have drugs now? And then proceeded to, you know, get the max. I was like, hey, dude, I'm a nurse. Would you mind just like cutting straight to the chase here and give me this, please? He's like, you know the drugs? And I was like, yeah.
I want the drugs.
I was like, give me that one. And he's like, all right, I'm going to give you as max as we can, just a quarter at a time, and get to the hospital. And
night,
then.
Night.
Anyway, some stuff turned off from the spine shock and swelling. I lost a little stuff in my side of my leg just from the blood, I guess from the injuries, pushing on the spinal cord, some stuff like that. I don't have a really clear memory of this time, but I knew that my leg like collapsed in. I couldn't walk right. The day after a resident, of course, like some first year resident doc comes in like, excuse me, good morning. I'm here to consent you for your surgery. And I'm like, what surgery? They're like, oh, we're going to fuse you. I was like, oh, okay. Which one? And they were like, well, it's going to be from your T10 to your L5.
Say what?
I was like, my entire lower back, you're going to do a 7-level fusion on like a early 30s person, a 31-year-old? How old am I now? Anyway, so I was like, are there any other options? Can we talk about this? Like, let's have a discussion. Like, can I talk to your boss maybe? Yeah. Like, I didn't like want to go full Karen, but I was...
I'd like to talk to your manager.
Yeah, but it's also most of your back. Like,
yeah, and I was like, dude, I want to pick up my kids one day. Like, yeah. Like, I want to be able to tie my shoes. Like, I want to not have to grab things with a wand. So they were like, oh, this will be so much faster. It'll be great. Like, they're going to fix you up quick. It'll be out of here and just healing. I was like, yeah, but I'm never going to move again. I was like, I need range of motion if I'm ever going to have an active life. And so they were like, I mean, you could just kind of lay in a brace for a while. I mean, your neurodeficits are starting to resolve and stuff is looking okay, but it'll be faster to just get the surgery. And I was like, I'm good with laying, dude. I can lay. I can lay a long time. Like, as long as I need to heal. And basically the agreement we had was if I continue improving and I don't get more neurodeficits between me and the neurosurgeon for the spine, they're like, at every checkup, you know, it's like 2 weeks, a month, you know, 2 months, whatever. I was like, if I continue improving, we're going to keep putting the surgery off. If I start going south or if I start having any problems, we're going to do the surgery. And they're like, that'll give us more new bone to drill into if you're healing fast. So I then proceeded to move into my girlfriend's nursing school friend's parents' house, who are this awesome couple, from, the Bay Area. And we lived at their house for a while because I really couldn't take care of myself. And the fun part was 3 weeks later, my girlfriend breaks her neck paragliding.
Oh, Jesus. Ooh. Christ.
Yeah, she was in lessons. They were learning accuracy. She was in kind of the P1 to P2, and she was trying to go for accuracy. So she was trying to like sink it in or like not blow past her target. she should have just blown past her target, but the radio was out between her instructor or something was not right.
Like,
and she was like watching the target go by. And she basically stall spun from about 50 feet,
ooh,
came straight down. And she's so freaking tough that she ended up getting like a liver lack, a small pneumo, some soft tissue labral tear in her hip, and she broke her C6 right at the bottom of her neck. She whiplashed forward, broke her neck. So I'm like, you know, in Adventures in Oxyland. And I get like, I was like, did I hear my phone ringing, man? What was that? I must have been dreaming. I'm tripping again. And it was. It was repeated phone calls from the hospital that she got taken to. So I like strap into my brace, like pop another one, and drive like 90 miles an hour down to the hospital she's at by Point of the Mountain. And long story short, she ended up with a fusion. She checks out of the hospital. She's in a neck brace. I'm in a full torso hoo-yah. And we were quite the couple walking through Whole Foods that day,
right?
When she got discharged.
Now, if you didn't have a medical background, you would have probably gotten fused up. You
know, probably, yeah. Yeah. More than likely, I would have just done what the doctor says and trusted him. But I, being a bit of a doubting Thomas, I was like, hey, man. Like, let's talk about other options. Mm-hmm. Like, there's got to be something else. I think one day I might have been that person that would get the hardware out. I don't know if my body would have worked then.
Mm-hmm.
But I do know that it was a pretty long road. And then the worst part was not really as much sort of the pain, limitation, doubt, not knowing if I'll ever do this thing again. But it was navigating the intricacies of simultaneous opiate and benzo addiction. I was discharged from the hospital on Oxy-15s, which are about three times the kind of normal low dose, and on Valium-10s. And as you guys know from the previous life we lived in early 20s, you know, I had a pretty high tolerance for boozing. And I think that led to having a high tolerance for those meds that were helping me. And then also, you know, kind of our medical system, it's a pill slingshot sometimes. And, it's what the people want and it's what I needed for a time, but it also really set me back. And I had to explore a lot of alternative therapies to kind of work my way through not being completely addicted, but I was sort of, not to do too much soul bearing, but I was really looking over the edge at kind of what an addicted homeless life was. I was really close to losing my job and being on a lot of those meds and kind of, you know, it was pretty real. I kind of got denied for any kind of short term disability or anything because I hadn't had enough time working and I hadn't worked at my position for a year. So I didn't qualify for Family Medical Leave Act.
Oh, wow.
I was about 9 months in, I think. So I basically had, I didn't have a leg to stand on. I was going to be out on the street. If I didn't go back to work. So I basically, I think it was 2 months in, 3 months in, I had an awesome manager who got me into an office position doing chart audits. So I could literally lay on a couch in a back office with a screen in front of me and I could audit charts. And I did that for a month until I could heal enough to kind of get back on the floor. And then I sort of went back to my nursing duties, but I needed like a lot of help. And shout out to our technicians who really helped me. I'm actually going to one of their, weddings in August.
Nice.
Yeah. So we're still friends.
Nice. How long ago was that when all this went down?
That was 2016.
Nice. Thanks. You're going on like 9 years.
Yeah, I was at
7 years. Can I do math?
I was at my last time in Norway, I think, was that June, just before that. That was my kind of last thing I went to, and that was a amazing time. It was there was some tragedy at it. I was kind of close to and witnessed a fatality. And then it was just the lowest low, but right before that was the highest high. I just finished doing like an 8 or 9 way wingsuit flight with some amazing people around, like from exit 8 coming around the mountain, flying next to the cliffs.
Yeah.
And then we're all super stoked and we're like high-fiving and packing in the landing area. And I'll never forget it because it was like this super memorable time because Micah Couch was there and we'd met here in 2015. I lived above the base point when Fabian had it.
Mm-hmm.
And the Dubai dudes lived in the apartment above me. I was just like sharing a room with the bartender because I was, you know, just broke dude. I would kind of climb the outside of the building up to their terrace whenever they were up there kind of hanging out. And I got to know them a little bit and I ended up doing a bunch of jumps. I mean like 4 with Micah in Norway and did some special times. We kind of bonded a little bit.
I remember that summer. That was a good time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those dudes were killing it. I just remember I would get there and be like, oh, you guys get your 12 in for the day yet?
Dude, I actually was like, maybe I need to quit everything and go work at Skydive Dubai. That's where all the best jumpers are.
Like, yeah, like, I need to step up my game.
They were winning everything.
Yeah, just crushing. Yeah, and yeah, it was incredible. But, you know, then after that, I had that go on, and I kind of credit it with I laid on the couch through August 2016, and I tried not to log into Facebook.
That was a rough year.
Yeah. And
16 was a real rough year for
it. Yeah,
fucking everybody died in 16.
I watched like all the people I looked up to, almost all of them, kind of leave the scene.
Yeah, like every couple weeks, you were just like, God. Yeah,
Not even every couple weeks. I could not get on Facebook without finding out that another friend was dead. Like that was a brutal year.
But the great thing was that we got to know them, and they had that influence on us. We shared that time, and that's a gift. That's the greatest thing that we could have, because those times are super special, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because I'm sure that at some point I'm going to spill something on one of you guys and be like, yeah, fuck that guy. Freaking chicken sandwich all over the back of my shirt. Damn, I can't believe it. What a tool. But
then, you know, years later we'll talk shit about you spilling that goddamn chicken sandwich.
Right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, that was... It was beautiful, and then it was like, yeah, it was, you don't know it's beautiful at the time, right? You know, you're just kind of like, just having another night at the Horner, wherever you happen to be.
Vibing, yeah.
Yeah, and then poof, somebody's gone, and then, yeah.
I mean, there was an essay somebody wrote about somebody coming out on the dance floor and just killing it in a chicken suit. And just throwing down moves and everybody just being like, damn, they're killing it. Look at them. Get it. Yeah. Woo. Go chicken suit guy. And then they just kind of dance their way off the dance floor and they're gone. And chicken suit just departed the building. But you're like, damn, they killed it. Look at that chicken suit. I forget who wrote that, but I was like, between that and the essay about soul coals that Jimmy put out, he talked about how You keep them with you. You keep these soul coals of the person. Sometimes you take that coal out and you blow on it and it gets hot again. And, you know, it lights up and that's you remembering them, keeping them close to you, and it's their soul coal.
Yeah.
I thought, I was like, well, that's poignant.
Right.
But in these communities, right, in the military, right, in climbing, in mountaineering, they're all high-risk environments. We're all different levels of risk, different levels of consequence. And some people are here and some people aren't. But it also really brings us closer to each other than if it was just like, oh, hey, Phil in the next cubicle. Hey, what's up, dude? Yeah, game this weekend. Wow, how about that?
Yeah. Did you see the email from the boss?
I can't believe it.
Yep.
The audacity.
Sports.
Sports this weekend.
Sports ball.
Sports. Sports. Did they ball. Put the ball in the thing?
Yeah. Do you ever just kind of feel like whenever you bring up, I don't know if you bring this up, but I've had people ask me like, oh, hey, what'd you do this weekend? And like, oh, I went to Twin Falls and threw myself off a bridge 8 times. Yeah. What? Mm-hmm. Are you okay? Do you need to talk to somebody? No, I'm good. I'm a little tired, but you know, I'm good, man. I'm a little guy cracking my finger from packing, but you know, whatever. Yeah, it's difficult for relating to kind of the normal sometimes.
Yeah.
Especially if you guys know you have professional careers and stuff.
Yeah. So yeah. Like, well, I've had the entire spectrum. So back when I was working with Marines, they would be like, oh yeah. Oh, base jumping. I've never tried that. And I'd be like, yeah, no shit, you haven't. Like it's not like you just go to the parachute store and...
You don't try base jumping. You base jump or you don't.
Unless you're in Brento.
Yeah, and then...
I just want to try it once. You ever had the tourists come up and they go, where do you rent this?
Yeah.
But I interrupted you.
Yeah. No. So then pendulum swinging all the other direction, I've been like, you have some rough weeks at work, right? And I'll be like, fuck, I just need to jump off a cliff. Like, I don't give a shit. Like, I am jumping this weekend. And they're like, are you okay? And I was like, it's not like that, man.
When it's a text message that says, I don't care if it's open.
I don't even care if it opens.
Like, you're going to take your Harley fat boy around the block 3 times. I'm going to do my thing, okay?
Yeah. Well, no, no, I really don't care if it opens because I packed it correctly. I will initiate the opening sequence. Whatever happens after that, fuck it. Like, it's just one of those weeks, but I know I'm doing everything right. But you can do everything right and still have a bad day in our sport.
Yeah.
So it is what it is, but it's just one of those like, but in factor. Text message form, sometimes that can be received by a non-jumper.
Yeah. I was going to say there are people inside the circle who get our
dark humor and just kind of
understand what we're saying. And then there's the rest of the world.
I definitely jumped on the dark humor train really fast when I transitioned to the ER. They're new guy's he's kind of jaded for a new guy, isn't he?
Well, new guy's kind of fucked up.
Find me a Navy corpsman that it doesn't have a dark sense of humor.
Yeah, when you're like, oh boy, where's the guys with the RPGs again?
Yeah.
So the ramp is still up.
All summer long.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. Because of the construction.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So somebody went in last week.
Oh, jeez.
On ATC.
I think that was like the day before I got here. I was pretty sad to hear.
Yep. Yeah. So then I've fallen off social media. Like I check Facebook once every few months, maybe. And it's usually because somebody says like, oh yeah, somebody went in. And so I go check BFL. But otherwise I don't really check Facebook anymore. But then you go back and you look at Facebook and like check the comments. You're like, oh yeah, this is why I don't fucking hang out here anymore.
If you want to see the monkey poo flinging session, you always go to the comments section, right?
Yeah.
And our basal instincts take over through our keyboards.
Yep.
Oh man, I'm gonna get that guy so good. Punctuation's kind of suck.
You know, it's the same comments, just recycled several years later.
The meme game's gotten better though.
But see, I love the meme game. I've gone from the meme game to just being absorbed by reels.
Yeah.
Because I'm too old for TikTok.
Oh man, somehow the algorithm learned that I like mountain bike crashes.
Yeah. Oh. Because everybody loves that shit.
Oh, dude.
Yeah.
Not like fatal ones, but you're just like, ooh.
Of course, the Instagram reels do get dark sometimes. You're like,
yeah, they can.
I just watched somebody get shot multiple times. And I'm like, wait, why am I watching this?
It's always funny when you're like,
why have I watched this 4 times?
Oh man, algorithm. Like, don't click on that. Don't click on that.
Yeah, definitely don't like it or send it to your friends. Because
or accidentally your parents or something.
Or you're going to get a lot more of those. Yeah, the cop shootout reels.
I don't get those yet.
I can't watch that stuff, man.
My phone's on airplane, so I'm hoping it's not picking that up so that I get it later.
I only do comedies, you know, like mountain bike crashes are okay. Yeah. Sometimes the algorithm's getting
getting hurt. It's one of my favorites. Yeah.
Those are fun.
Yeah. That teeter totter's not going to survive that lawsuit.
Yeah.
Yeah, the algorithm sometimes dangles as like war stuff. I'm like, no.
Yeah.
But I'd probably be remiss if I didn't talk a little bit about a way that I've found to sort of come full circle with the kind of war stuff. So I was a corpsman with the Marines and deployed to Iraq in 2004, 2005, 2006. From those experiences, I have quite a bit of survivor's guilt. I don't like Veterans Day or Memorial Day that much.
Or the term, thank you for your service.
Thank you for my service.
Thank you for paying your taxes. And I look at
pretending.
Someone's like, I sneeze and someone's like, bless you. It's like telling someone I was in the Marines is like, oh, thank you. It's like
reflexive.
It's an obligatory.
Yeah.
It's an obligatory vomit out of their mouth. Like, ah, don't.
That and okay. Sort of people were like, wait, you're in the military? I was like, yeah, I was in the Navy. Oh, what ship? Doesn't work that way. But. What I was getting to with that is I have a pretty good amount of survivor's guilt about stuff because, you know, your job as the corpsman is not to be the guy kicking in the door. You're supposed to be in the back and or hiding, not trying to get shot because you're a force multiplier and you're not supposed to get shot because they need you around to keep people's wet stuff on the inside. Mm-hmm. So... I don't like those holidays. I would often be in a super bad mood around them. I'd just go somewhere remote. I would isolate. And although recent retirement, when I used to partake a lot of the drink, it wasn't a good time. So I kind of backwards stumbled into an organization called 22 Jumps. My friend Adam Crum, that anybody that's been through Moab has probably slept on a beanbag in his living room at some point. And I lived in his driveway Jessica and I and our three dogs lived in his driveway. Well, 2.5 dogs. One's only 30 pounds. But we lived in his driveway when we first moved to Moab. We decided to move away from Salt Lake. We moved to Moab 3 years ago. And
BC,
yeah,
before COVID,
in the BC times, and we lived in his driveway, and there's always that awkward knock in the morning, like, "Hey, man, how's it going?" He's like, "You gotta poop." He's like, "Yeah, that. Okay,
come on in. Just make sure you put some money in the shower jar."
You know, he sounds like Otto from The Simpsons. You guys have got to have this guy on. I've been trying to get him to come to Europe, but we'll get to that. He came up with an idea with his friend Tristan. They were both in 2-1 with the Marines, along with another guy I know, Glenn. And he said, "How about we do 22 jumps for Veterans Day because of the 22% or 22 veterans per day that take their lives, kind of on average?" And they were like, "That's a great idea." And it didn't come together at first, and then eventually it came together at Camelback. And a guy named Tristan Wimmer did 22 jumps off that, and also in honor of his...
Camelback.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a physical feat right there. I mean...
It is.
Camelback isn't the... I mean, it's a bit of a hike. I mean, it's... I mean... Yeah. I mean, I've only done it 4 or 5 times, so what it takes, half hour to get up there?
About, I think, this last year,
I mean, but that's still, it's up, you know.
Oh, it's a ways.
So to do that 22 times.
Yeah, it's definitely a leg day. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're going to need that parking spot right next to the handicap leg day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jesus. So, I thought, okay, this is a cool thing to do. And the organization does fundraising to donate to the Cohen Veterans Bioscience Foundation, who is working on biomarker research and other research into traumatic brain injuries along with PTSD. And they help and work with veterans to kind of work towards ending this 22. And I was like, all right, I've stayed pretty far away from the veteran community. But maybe this is kind of a full circle thing. I've kind of gone into this space thing. It's meant something to me. It's spoken to me. I found some community with it. Maybe I could help. So this past year to the Camelback event, I basically showed up and appointed myself safety corpsman.
Nice.
I've got an IV bag.
Before that,
couple ibuprofen.
I should back up a little bit. Crum did 22 jumps off Looking Glass in Moab, which is, I think, 125 feet. Oof. So it was him, him and Tristan. Tristan was kind of PCAing him off the exit repeatedly. Our good friend Mikey was packing. Hey. Glenn and I were kind of the rig shuttle monkeys, and then there was a filmer guy.
Wait, Mikey?
Did you say
Mikey Burns?
Mikey Burns.
Mikey.
Yeah.
Not Mikey. Sorry.
So basically, we had this crew of veterans plus camera dude, and we were supporting our bro doing this thing for something that matters to all of us. And it wasn't this rah-rah military flag thing, right? We were just doing this for each other, with each other, kind of like, all right, this was some part of our lives. Let's honor it in this way, and let's also help each other with this. Mm-hmm. And I was like, cool, this doesn't tick the boxes I don't want to tick. This makes me feel like I am doing something without being kind of labeling, or without sort of getting into a real negative space and sort of just focusing and kind of circling about this sort of negativity, right? So it was like, cool, we're doing something, and this is cool, and this is an athletic event, involves the outdoors, and I was like, this ticks all the boxes, man. I think I want to be involved with this. And I was super hesitant, but I was like, let's keep going with it. So that was the first one I showed up to. So we were just kind of like humping rigs to the top, and I was like, all right, I got IVs and, you know, whatever. But of course, I would never give an IV without having a medical director nearby. Otherwise, I'd lose my license. That'd be crazy.
Right.
And then did the Camelback one, and I basically appointed myself, you know, safety guy. So I was like, all right, hey, please clear the landing area. And we were talking back and forth. Crum was on the exit. I had a radio down below. Somebody literally handed me a freaking wind meter, and I was calling off winds whenever it got weird and squirrely. And they're like, actually, it's kind of good having a guy doing that. Maybe we should do that. So it just kind of got folded into the organization. And I was glad that I could provide support for that. And then a lot of the stories that some of the people were sharing at the dinner they have as part of a fundraiser, there was two dudes who happened to be veterans who were musicians that came and sang. There were stories shared by different people. And then there were doctors from the organization, from Cohen Veterans Bioscience, talking about what they do. And, you know, I got a pretty sensitive bullshit meter, and I didn't really feel like it was going off. I was like, no, I don't get that, like, okay, you know, typical, there's a veterans organization, and they're a nonprofit, and usually the only person that's having anything go on is, like, this whole thing is kind of feeding into, like, somebody that just has an organization. But I was like, this one's not really doing that, because the staff is all volunteers. Right. They're all about my age. We were all kind of doing similar things in similar places at those times, but it was also base jumping centric. And I was like, all right, well, this works. I guess I'm going to keep doing that. And,
was it all in Moab?
There was the Moab event where Crum did 22. He actually did 25.
Is there a specific day that you do that on, or do you just pick one?
So there, with 22 Jumps, the organization now, there is 22 Jumps in West Virginia for Bridge Day. There's 22 Jumps at the Prine, and that was for, what's the one we just had, Memorial Day. And then there is Camelback, which happens at the Arizona Base Boogie in January. And then there's also going to be a Moab one that's going to be kind of reoccurring. So,
so I feel like we could do one here with this. And
oh my God,
I've been thinking. Well, I mean, similar
I've done eight or ten off the ramp.
No, you haven't.
No, I have. When I brought like a boat.
Go to your separate corners. Touch gloves. I want a good. Yes, come out swinging.
Eight jumps.
Dude, I had everybody's rigs. This was back in the early days when I was hungry. Mm. But I had all the rigs. I didn't have to pack any rigs that day. Mm. I mean, you could do 22 jumps off. I mean,
somewhere.
But this is also part of what makes the ramp dangerous is that it's
right,
so
yeah,
easy
access.
To get to so fast.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like you wouldn't
it's right
even,
there.
You wouldn't even be tired. You would just have to catch 22 gondolas.
I mean, I'm pretty sure I watched Zach Tessier back in the day do probably 22 jumps in a day, like in a wingsuit doing quadruple flips and stuff. That it was amazing to watch jump.
Something about. I'm sure somebody listening to this has already got a plan.
Probably, yeah. And it's growing, and I think it's going in a good direction, and I'm kind of happy to be involved with it. Yes. We just did the event in Twin Falls. And on that, I was kind of medical on the ground, which basically was like, you know, 12-ish, 13 hours just in the landing area at the Prine, basically stuffing into stash bags so they could take a break, grab their water. And I just had like a cooler. They actually gave me a dude who had just gotten out of the military, who was a recon Marine. And they were like, all right, this guy's going to hike all the stuff out. He's going to be the mule for the whole team. All the athletes hiked their own stuff out. They just all were just such G's about it. And it was two female veterans, a firefighter, and then my friend Mikey Burns, who's also a veteran from the Army. And they basically crushed it. They did 22 jumps, and they almost every single – we had like one or two times we carried rigs out just for like timing, I think, or just so the athlete could drink water on the way out because they were behind. But they absolutely crushed it. And it was a really proud thing to kind of support those athletes and to get that event done. And I think it ended up raising on the order of like $20,000, $30,000 to contribute to Cohen Veterans Bioscience. And this isn't like a fundraiser where this is a self-licking ice cream cone. Like, oh yeah, we'll raise all this money and then it just goes poof. Like, no, I think it's like 80 something percent. There's like some admin costs just for like running computer stuff or something so that you can take in the contributions. You have to have some kind of infrastructure set up. And then it all goes to Cohen Veterans Bioscience to further this kind of sort of fight to help each other.
Mm-hmm. Nice. So where, if someone wanted to learn more about 22 Jumps, do you know where they could check it out?
22jumps.org. And if anybody wants to contribute, it's 22jumps.org. I think it's a forward or a backslash. Donate. And nice. It was created by Tristan to honor his late brother, who was a first recon dude, suffered a very bad blast injury. And fought his med board, went to MARSOC, became a MARSOC dude, and then got out. And unfortunately, a series of events with his injury led to him taking his own life. And Tristan was a scout sniper dude who started this organization to honor his late brother and to kind of combat this thing that is kind of pretty common among dudes that were doing the things.
Well, there's definitely a trend between traumatic brain injury and suicide. I mean, we're seeing it in martial arts, football,
mm-hmm.
but especially any...
This kind of hallmark injury of this warfare.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you're in an organization that's around a lot of explosions, that's...
Yeah, my first unit was 155 artillery. And then when I was at Special Operations Training Group, I would frequently just be...
like breaching and stuff? Or
I would be the safety corpsman for breaching all day for courses. And then also, you know, be next to a lot of charges. We'd be like, all right, well, our max net explosive weight is this much. Why don't we just stuff a little extra in there so we can get rid of this stuff? Yeah. So we'd make, you know, demo potatoes and be trying to get rid of demo and just popping off bigger and bigger ones. I mean, I remember one time... we're in like Hawthorne, Nevada, and it's like the corpsman and the EOD techs were always stuck together. So the EOD guys are like, hey, it's user lose. We got to get rid of this stuff.
We don't want to turn this back in.
Hey,
so
you guys want to cut this boulder in half? Uh-huh. Check this out. We like wrap it with flex linear cutting charge. And, you know, of course, that stuff's like mostly lead. So you're like eating this cloud of lead after you just blew something in half. And we're just blowing stuff up just because we had to get rid of the demo. But, yeah, I'm sure there's something going on in here from that. Yeah, maybe that's why I did go to the... stay away from explosives, kids. It'll make your base jump.
That's cool. You're really a part. That's really cool. You're part of that. That's
I'm kind of like I don't know how to say this, and that kind of sounded dumb, but it's like I don't feel proud about a lot of things that I'd be in, but like I kind of feel proud about giving something to this organization a little bit. And I don't want to be a shill or anything like that for that, but it's something that has given me a place for some of those feelings, and it's working.
Yeah, nice.
It's working.
Yeah, that's important. So, yeah, you put it on my radar. I you know, I followed a little like in the message, like it's like, oh, check them out, you know, start following them, looking, you know, scoping out what's going on. It's, yeah, it's tight, man. It's really cool.
It's a righteous cause.
Yeah, I'm pretty stoked about it. So you guys gonna get any more fun this weekend?
Dude, so much fun this weekend. I signed up for the Young Frau Marathon.
Solid.
I've never run a marathon before.
I had somebody I used to work for that said anything over 3 miles is an E&E.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Escape and evasion.
He's going You're running to, away. He's going to go from Interlaken and he's going to run up to fucking Kleinashaddy.
Yeah.
I act like I'm not into endurance events, but I've been like glued to the X-Alps live tracking for paragliding.
Did you see the Frenchie that went like... 11 and a half hours.
Biggest day ever in history. Yeah.
Of all time.
The local dude from nearby in Frutigen, Kriegelmauer, won number 8. So, I don't know. I'm a little bit of a paragliding nerd, even though I don't really paraglide.
They're sitting in a swing, right? And flying around and then running up a mountain.
Swing like fly running,
something,
yeah.
Something
like isn't that the German name? Swing fly running.
Yeah. We fly and we run.
Yeah
it's... I think like Red Bull must just know that I like all that stuff, or you know that people like in our That's demographic. Not... They're like, dude, hey, you guys check this stuff out.
Yeah,
the algorithm knows.
The algorithm knows. If we know one thing from all our discussion, the algorithm it has us all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is why I'm going to get some really dark Instagram posts when I turn my phone back on. Thanks to Brian.
But
why did you like a page called Lawn Darts Only?
Meanwhile, you're happy to not get like Baby Shark ads or Yo Soy Dora, the Explorer. Yeah, like you're not getting like baby ads.
Yeah, no.
Thank you, the algorithm.
Yeah,
that's what I wanted. Give me bullshit.
Are you are you doing like a coaching plan or anything?
Yeah. So I've got a 6 week. I have more than 6 weeks until at the time of this recording. I have like 9 weeks until
He read a book once.
Yeah. So from my Garmin watch, I have a half marathon, like training plan, but then I have another like full marathon training plan. And ironically enough, the running programs are very similar. So I'm just sort of splitting the difference between the two for now. And then because we have the luxury of living close enough to Lauterbrunnen.
Yeah, you're getting course preview every
Yeah. So tomorrow I'm going to go up to Vingen and then like hike part. Well, we'll see. I might actually do the part from Lauterbrunnen up to Vingen and just bring my base rig and then go do a Le Mousse.
I'd geek out on training plans.
Yeah. Yeah, so we'll see. I plan, so as you know from like your first Meiringen or your first Milkstuhl or your first time going to Mushroom, it sucks because you don't know how far it is. And you're just
even your first time for the season, I broke off today.
You're just like trudging, right? And then like, but once you know the route, then you like know where like you can like rest or what you can do. And so like my goal before this race is to like know the entire route. I'm not going to run all of it, you know.
No one's running.
I'll run. The latter half. Everyone's sort of trudging, right?
Just, Alpine shuffle. Yeah.
but I want to know all the different sections so that I know where to like expend energy, like more energy,
or what to expect,
where to save it. Yeah,
I can catch it up here. I can burn it down here. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not just like just rolling the dice and like. Letting it fly.
You got a pretty solid injury prevention plan for the old stuff, the creaky bits.
No. I mean, I stretch every day. I do a little bit of that yoga stuff. But
what the viewers don't know is that we were just stretching before this, doing weird yoga for the back.
Quite literally,
my back hurts just sitting here right now.
Maybe we're like the Tin Man, right? We just need to pass around the oil, like.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome, dude. That sounds like a really cool.
Yeah, it's midlife crisis challenge, you know.
Yeah, so. It's either a red Corvette and plastic surgery, or you know.
Yeah, or just run the Jungfrau marathon. Painful. Yeah, I feel like I'm chasing discomfort. Like, I mean, because you can either be discomfort or be uncomfortable now, or be uncomfortable when you're old.
Right.
And so it's like I'm choosing discomfort,
or a little bit of both. You're going to be uncomfortable now.
Or be uncomfortable later on.
I feel like I've been a keen observer of old people through my profession as well. Yeah. And like the ones that I love getting the ones that are like, they just come in for their like, you know, flu shot or whatever. And I'll get to meet them sometime and they're just killing it. They're like old people. They're like stoked, you know, and they're like, yeah, I'm 80, but whatever. I'm going to go play golf after this. You like golf?
Yeah.
You know, 80 year old stuff.
Yeah. But, Yeah, I hope to get there at this point. Like, I didn't think I would make 40, and then I did, and now it's well.
It's really interesting when you're that 19-year-old that's kind of contemplating the rest of their existence.
Oh, well, and, you know, you talked about the survivor's guilt. Like, I had something similar with being a Marine and going to college with – so Citadel grad, I had three – other platoon commanders that were my classmates all were in Haditha in 2006, 2007. Two of them were shot. One of them was fatal. They were in a different battalion. And my battalion came in right behind them. And I was like, well, I'm fucking getting shot. I'm the only Citadel platoon commander in this battalion. So I was like, well, I'm one of one. I was like, well, this is how this is going to work. And then I didn't get shot. And
like, one of these things is not like the other.
Right. Yeah. So
see, now we're being really dark.
Yeah. So I dealt with that for a little bit, but it is. I mean, I accept the odds and I accept that scenarios change over time. So it was
the Iraqis
didn't see
your fucking Citadel ring.
Yeah, I didn't wear it. I still don't.
You had one job.
Yeah. Well, my Marines didn't need any more shiny things to remind them that I went to college. So I just never wore it.
Give you those awkward questions like, so what's it like in a fraternity?
One giant fraternity.
When I was stationed in North Carolina still, I like to call it my unofficial college tour. I started going to hang out at UNC Chapel Hill because a bunch of dudes that I knew had gotten out and they all had kind of like this ex-Marine frat house basically. Nice. So I was just sort of like from half-baked, I was just like the guy on the couch. I'd be like, hey guy, what? Where'd this parking cone come from? Because I would, you know, go out and have a little too much and then have an adventure coming home.
Yeah.
As you do when you're a little younger.
Yeah, I didn't get to go to Chapel Hill too much. From Quantico, I would go down to East Carolina, because my parents lived in they lived there. What was that town? Where is East Carolina? Greenville, North Carolina. Mm. I had friends at East Carolina, and I would get like they'd see the short hair and they'd be like, "Yeah, no, you're not welcome." And I was like,
"You on the baseball team, bro? What's with the hair?"
I literally just like opened the door for 8 girls that are my friends, and now you're gonna tell me I can't come in? Like what? Yeah, it was always a little weird with certain places on the East Coast.
Yeah,
being a Marine.
Yeah, but yeah, it was definitely easy to get spotted even with that with the low reg haircut.
Yeah,
yeah. Adventures.
Yeah, adventures and challenges and you know, sometimes you get some scar tissue. It is what it is.
Right? You know, it's, for sure.
It's like none of us get out of this life without a few scuffs.
You know? Well, I mean, what's that? What's the silly quote? Like, the goal of life is not to arrive at the end with a perfectly preserved body, but to skid in sideways in a cloud full of dust going, "Wow, what a ride." Hunter right? S. Thompson, right?
Bro, I've like, that sounds great when you're younger, but when you've broken
until you're skidding.
Right. It's like I've broken my back. I've broken my right femur, my left tib-fib twice, my patella, left arm 3 times.
It's hey, like, man, it's not a competition,
At this point, yeah, it's like, no, it's like, I'm tired of, like, this, like, yeah, I'm in the skid, but I'm like, I'm tired of, like, everything hurts at this point.
Yeah, mid-skid.
Like, yeah. When I was younger, I was like, oh, that's the best quote ever.
I think
ever.
I'm skidding too early.
Yeah, when I was younger, I was like, that's the best quote ever. Now that I'm getting older, I'm like, no, like, I wish I had, like, treated my body better.
Yeah, for real. Yeah, it's cumulative, isn't it? I can see the attraction in some of the lower impact stuff too. Like you see the old dudes riding the gondola with the paragliders, and you're like, maybe it'd be nice to be 75 and still in the air.
Yeah, that's the exit strategy,
right?
Like, base has an expiration point.
Or diminishing. Yeah. I mean, the conversations come back in your mind too when you don't do it for a while and you kind of come back to different places and you realize the change in you and you're getting mirrored from the experience that you once had and you feel differently doing the same thing. But I mean, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. Right. But I guess if we keep getting different mental results, maybe it's not too insane.
Yeah, that's true. Cool. Well, bro, thank you so much for jumping on and for pinging me about like getting my shit together and doing another recording.
I've enjoyed this podcast so much, man. And I think that hearing the different voices of the community and having this sort of central resource and this kind of well of knowledge and experience, you know, we don't have a bonfire for all of us, but this is kind of our talking around the bonfire. And this is where we share the things that can be heard and the knowledge that people have had. You know, it's a pool of wisdom in the end is what we have from putting podcasts out and together. Plus there's always a couple of laughs.
Yeah. 100%.
For sure.
Anytime you want to do another, don't hesitate.
Thanks.
And if you're coming back through, please give me a heads up, just like you did this time. That was.
And we got to see you guys in Moab at some point, right?
100%. Yeah. I think we talked about this off air. Like,
how about it?
When you're on your trip,
I'm scared. Yeah. No.
When you're ready,
I don't want another broken leg. Every time I've broken my left leg twice.
Moab's awesome.
Yeah, I've had trips to Moab and I
broke my leg. We're just gonna have to have you jump something and land in the water.
Yeah, we're just gonna have to do like a surprise,
we'll
like
just PCA you.
Just don't tell
every
me
every single time.
Be like Randy, block off a week of vacation and just,
we'll send you off G-spot and put a boat in the water.
Yeah, I have to get there. Like both times, like when I had trips planned for Moab, I broke my leg before the trip.
All right, so don't plan this one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just like poof, surprise.
Brian's just going to be like, yo, take a week off here. And then
why? Don't worry about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Put this black hood over your head. You're gonna wake up somewhere.
Take all my parachutes away. Everything.
Go to sleep.
Yeah. You will go to sleep, or I will put you to sleep.
Oh,
you're
man.
In my world now.
Sizzle, thank you so much.
Hey, cheers, guys.
For this.
Cheers.
Appreciate it.
All right. This has been another Base Life podcast. Thanks, guys. All right. If you want to know more about our guests, just check out the show notes. And if you want to give us some feedback or reach out to us, you can hit us at baselife2014@gmail.com, facebook.com/thebaselife, and on Instagram, we're @base.life. All right. Thanks.